Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. Thank you very much for being here this Wednesday morning. We have four bills for public hearing and possible work sessions, and it looks like we have no special requests. So with that said, we'll just start at the top and work through the agenda. So we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2294.
Thank you, Chair Prusansky, members of the committee. The Board on Public Safety Standards and Training has five policy committees. House Bill 2294 adds one person representing the public to these policy committees and specifies the eligibility requirements for this position. There are no amendments. There is a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
All right. Thank you. I have one person signed up. Lindsay Hale, why don't you come on up? And while she's coming up, is there anyone else who will want to give testimony today on House Bill 2294?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Chair Prusansky, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lindsay Hale. I oversee the Professional Standards Division at the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, more commonly known as DPSST. House Bill 2294 comes before you on behalf of the Board of Public Safety Standards and Training. The concept for this bill was developed at the recommendation of a multidisciplined work group who was established with the permission of the board to review and make recommendations for changes as necessary to the standards that govern the denial and revocation of Oregon's public safety providers. Oregon statute establishes five discipline-specific policy committees that serve as recommending bodies to the board. These policy committees are responsible for making recommendations on policy, training curriculums, as well as recommendations on whether or not certification should be denied or revoked as a result of officer misconduct. The membership for these committees is established in statute and includes all ranks and disciplines. With the exception of the Private Security Policy Committee, the general public is not represented on these bodies. Given the gravity of some of the recommendations being made by these bodies and to increase transparency and legitimacy in Oregon's board and policy committee process, the board is recommending through House Bill 2294 to add one voting public member to each of the telecommunications, corrections, police, and fire policy committees. House Bill 2294, as drafted, requires the public members not be currently or previously employed or utilized in a discipline for which the policy committee has purview, nor can they be related by blood or marriage to someone who is employed or utilized in a discipline for which the policy committee has purview. That concludes my verbal testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right, thank you. Questions from anyone? So just for the record, it looks like my reading of this, are we going to have two separate public individuals, one that's going to be working on the police side and one on the fire service side?
So, Chair Prusansky, we have five discipline-specific policy committees. So there's police, corrections, the 911 dispatch community, fire, and then there's private security. So there would be one member added, to each of those groups to represent the public.
Yeah, and then scroll down far enough to see the others. All right. Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much. Again, is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on 2294? Not seeing anyone. We'll close the public hearing. I assume we have our paperwork. We will open up a work session on House Bill 2294.
Chair Prusansky, I move House Bill 2294 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 2294 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Lithicum, would you be kind to carry?
Sure, that'd be great.
All right, and we'll close the work session on 2294. We'll open up our next public hearing on House Bill 2594.
Thank you, Chair Prusansky, members of the committee. House Bill 2594 allows a non-immigrant lawfully in the United States under a compact of free association to serve as a police officer, corrections, or parole and probation officer. There is no amendment, and there is no fiscal or revenue impact.
All right, I have three individuals that are signed up. Erics, why don't you go ahead and come on up, and then Shane Jackson, and is David Anatol? Why don't you all three please come up together? While they're coming up, is there anyone else who will want to give testimony on House Bill 2594?
Thank you.
And Erics, are you going to?
I'm going to defer, and I think they'll frame it up.
Okay.
Chair Prusansky, Board, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Shane Jackson. I am the contract lobbyist for the Compact of Free Associations organization called CAN, which is COFA Alliance National Network. It's a pleasure to come to you before today with this bill. We were doing some research and finding opportunities for the COFA community to participate more fully in Oregon. And we came across an issue where several of the members of the COFA community were attempting to become police officers or law enforcement officials, but they were denied this because they were foreign nationals. And for various reasons, they had maintained their citizenship in either Palau, the Marshalls, or Micronesia. That disqualified them under federal and state law, but on further investigation, we found out we could make an exception and allow foreign nationals who reside in Oregon to become law enforcement officers if we do this, if we pass this bill. So we structured this bill with Representative Andy Olson over on the House side with the help of the Campbells and the community. We were able to craft a very nice, I wouldn't call it a elegant answer, it's more of an elegant opportunity that will allow our individuals who are members of our society here in Oregon, residents of Oregon, taxpayers in Oregon, good people, the opportunity to participate in law enforcement. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And David?
Good morning, Chair Persanowski and Senate members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. My name is David Anatok. I am with the Oregon Marshallese community, also the lead community organizer for the CAN organization that Shane mentioned, COFA Alliance Network. And as most of you know, the legislative body has already rectified and enacted some of the legislations in the past 4 years now for these COFA communities in Oregon, and we're very thankful for that. I just want to bring back that kind of that history of these last 4 years and what that really means to the community and to all of us together. But I mainly just take the opportunity to thank you again for hearing us this morning on House Bill 2594. In the last 4 years, as I mentioned, 2013, House Bill 2517, which allows 8 years driver license and identification cards to these COFA Islanders or residents of Oregon, was the first piece of legislation that this body has passed. And if you recall, the Real ID Act caused these citizens from the islands to have just 1 year licenses, so they had to go to DMV every year to renew their license or ID. And most folks through that process lost jobs or couldn't get home, basic personal loans. So that was a huge barrier. So when we brought this up to this body, the legislative body, in 2013, immediately you changed that to 8 years in 2014. As of January of 2014, was the first time folks are now able to have 8-year licenses like any other Oregonians, and we're very proud of that and thankful for that. Last year, in the short session of 2016, you also unanimously passed the first COFA healthcare program, not only in Oregon, but across the state. This healthcare program is called the COFA Premium Assistance Program, if you recall, and it provides, for the first time, basic healthcare need, kind of like Medicaid services, to these COFA Islanders since 1996, when the Major Welfare Reform Act was passed. So this, again, like I said, Oregon is leading the way in this, and now we bring to you House Bill 2594, which is, again, allowing this opportunity that Shane was talking about, not only for the community, but for the communities at large here in Oregon. We are one of the fastest growing diverse community here in Oregon, and we believe having this opportunity will only address some of the diverse need that is needed with the law enforcement today, and we encourage your support on House Bill 2594. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Eric Skablix, Director for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, more often known as DPSST. What you've heard today is a very unique situation, and what you have in front of you is a very clean solution. This discussion started a number of months ago and really came to be solid after a forum that was hosted at Kaiser with the community members. Chief Teague from Kaiser, Sheriff Myers from Marin County, and Superintendent Hampton and myself attended that, as did a lot of local community members talking about law enforcement, diversity, the issues affecting law enforcement in the United States in 2016 and now in 2017. As some of you know, we are looking at large numbers of potential retirements in our law enforcement ranks, potentially in the next 2 years, more than 1,000 officers that are certified are eligible to retire, and they could leave, and many are leaving because they're just ready to go. We're looking to recruit the best people that we can to serve our communities. We're looking to diversify our agencies, and this allows us to do that. There's a very large Marshallese population here in Oregon, especially here in the Willamette Valley. A number of have served in the military, and we thank them for their service. We thank all of our Oregonians who have served in the military, but this gives us a larger pool to look at for applicants, and the bill in front of you allows us to consider these people for work in law enforcement. Be glad to answer any questions.
Great. And are there any questions? Senator Manning.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. This is a law enforcement is a pretty tough job to fill, and a lot of departments I am aware of are really short. And by expanding a pool of potential applicants and stuff is a good thing. You know, Washington State, they admitted they were down 1,000 state troopers. And still trying to recruit and stuff, and they're having a hard time. Even with Fort Lewis being there, military doesn't always have the best transition into law enforcement. But I think this is a good opportunity to help expand the pool because it's we need some help out there.
Yep. Any other comments?
I would just add, especially now. It doesn't look like a very attractive chosen profession right now. But anyway, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you all very much for coming forward. So we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2594 and open up a work session on House Bill 2594.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2594 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 2594 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Manning, will you be the carrier?
Yes, sir.
And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 2594, and we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2608.
Chair Prozonsky, members of the committee, House Bill 2608 comes on behalf of the Oregon State Bar and contains a modification to the Uniform Trust Code. The Uniform Trust Code was last updated during the 2015 legislative session. At that time, the applicability of the revisions only applied to trusts created after the effective date of that act. HB 2608 would allow trusts created before the effective date of the act, but executed after that date, to receive the benefits of the revisions. There are no amendments, no revenue impact, and a minimal fiscal impact.
All right, and I have Phil Jones, if you'll come forward. As Phil's coming forward, is there anyone else besides him who want to give testimony on House Bill 2608?
Good morning. Chair Prozanski and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Philip Jones. I'm an attorney in private practice in Portland. I work in the area of trusts and estates. I'm on the executive committee of the Estate Planning and Administration section of the bar, which is sponsoring this legislation through the bar. And we came to this committee and the legislature 2 years ago to make three small technical changes to the Uniform Trust Code. And I'm embarrassed to say, partly through my own personal oversight, the effective date that was placed on those three amendments was not what we wanted. And to be honest about how it happened, we had three small paragraphs and we had an attorney assigned to each one. None of us read the fourth paragraph, which the Legislative Council added, and that's exactly how it happened. There's no way I can say it any other way. So this brings the 2015 changes into line with the rest of the Uniform Trust Code and the effective date applicability of the Uniform Trust Code as it was enacted in 2005 and became effective in 2006. I can go into more detail if you like, but I think that summarizes it. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Senator Thatcher?
Well, I noticed there is an emergency clause, but it sounds like you kind of need that to be
The point is that if there is any litigation brought concerning a trust, we'd like to get everybody on board at the same time in the same place and get it cleaned up.
And following up with that, Phil, does this have some type of retroactiveness in the sense of insuring? So does it go back in time to insure whatever we've done?
That might end up on sine die.
Oh, of course it's going to. I got to get on there sometime, somehow.
I could go into great detail on that, but I think the simplest way to say it is that when the Uniform Trust Code was enacted, it applied to all future litigation concerning trusts, regardless of when the trusts were signed. So if my great-great-grandfather signed a trust in 1937, in 2006, his trust became subject to the Uniform Trust Code. So it applies to future disputes, and it applies to past trusts as well as future trusts. So it applies to all trusts. So there is a limited amount of retroactivity there, yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Since I will be carrying the bill, I just want to make sure I knew what I was going to say. All right. Any other questions or comments? All right. So I'm on tape. We got that. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for this opportunity, Mr. Chairman.
You bet. We'll close the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 2608.
Chair Brzezinski, I move House Bill 2608 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 2608 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? I guess the chair is carrying this one. And we'll close the work session on 2608. And let's see, House Bill 2610, we'll open up our public hearing on it.
Chair Prozonsky, members of the committee, House Bill 2610 also comes from a work group of the Oregon State Bar. It updates the process for electronic signatures on corporate documents and sending electronic notices. It also allows a person to refuse an electronic notice and specifies when an electronic notice has been received. There are no amendments and no revenue or fiscal impact.
All right, looks like Kenny Hagelin. Kenny, why don't you come on up? While he's coming up, anyone else who wants to give testimony on 2610?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Prozonsky, members of the committee, my name is Kenny Hagelin. I'm an attorney in Portland with Lane Powell. I'm also a member of the Executive Committee of the Business Law Section of the Oregon State Bar. House Bill 2610 is a result of a legislative task force of the Business Law Section. We reviewed the Oregon Business Corporation Act for provisions and how it deals with electronic technology. We determined that the provisions were inadequate. The bill is largely based on a Model Business Corporation Act bill or change that was adopted in 2009. The changes are predominantly made to the definition section and the notice section in order to avoid having to make changes throughout the entire act. We added definitions and kind of incorporated electronic technology into document signing, all those different items. We conformed it to Oregon drafting standards. Two of the key differences that we made from the Model Business Act is that the ability to give electronic notices to shareholders and directors and to have directors send consents electronically is the default rule, as opposed to the Model Act, where it's kind of an opt-in. Corporations can opt out of the ability to give electronic notices by putting that in their articles. We also, a key difference we put in is that a shareholder, any individual shareholder, can opt out of receiving electronic notices by delivering to the corporation a revocation for that. And at that point, the corporation can no longer deliver electronic notices to that shareholder. If email doesn't go through, the corporation is obligated to deliver notice by some other means, but that doesn't change the effectiveness of that original notice. However, if two emails don't go through to a shareholder and the corporation knows about it, it's deemed to be a revocation by that shareholder, and then in the future, the corporation would have to deliver notices by some other means.
All right, questions? Senator Thatcher.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if that shareholder wants to opt out, can they email their replication?
No.
Anyway. But I do have a question about official email addresses? How is that determined?
I think would be maintained by the corporation. It does say that the notice has to go to an email address used by the shareholder or that the shareholder is designated for use.
Okay.
All right. Kenny, I want to follow up on that. If I understand the presentation at this point, I'm going to call it the default, is that notice is done electronically unless the corporation opts out and or the individual shareholder opts out.
That's correct.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Senator
Thanks,
Nimbro.
Mr. Chair. So, again, if the shareholder doesn't have an electronic address that the corporation knows about, how does that work?
Chair Przanski, Senator Dembro, if the shareholder doesn't have an email address, then the corporation would have to deliver notices in some other manner.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So walking through this, okay. So walking through this, I'm buying shares of stock. I don't have an email address to use at the time of purchase of the stock. I'm assuming that when someone's buying stock, it's going to have a point that says required information, and there will be an email address.
Mm-hmm.
But there's going to be some type of means for that transaction to go forward by them declaring, I have no electronic address. I will need to receive notice through mail or whatever other means.
Chair Przanski, so the corporation has to maintain a record, a list of shareholders with their addresses, and that's their physical address, and that's notices can be done that way. If they have an email address, then the corporation could use that if the email is used by the shareholder or they've designated that. If they fail to deliver that email address in that subscription agreement, then the corporation wouldn't have an address to use. But if in the future there's a email address designated or the company knows that once used, it could start using that automatically unless there's that revocation or it's prohibited in the articles.
Okay. Senator Lithicum?
I was just curious about the in your statement you referred to when the corporate body receives notification that the electronic message was not successfully delivered. What does that look like?
Chair Przanski, Senator Lithicum. I think it would be a kickback on the email that it wasn't delivered. But there is the secretary would have to have knowledge that the emails aren't going through in order for that deemed revocation to happen. If it appears that they're going through and they have no knowledge that they're not getting to them, then that deemed revocation wouldn't happen.
Okay.
So
trying to redeem myself, a kickback, we really don't talk about a bounce, yes.
Right. Oh. Yes, a bounce back of the email.
Hopefully that goes on the tape too. All right, any other questions or comments? All right, thank you very much, Kenny.
Thank you.
Close that public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 2610.
Chair Przanski, I move House Bill 2610 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher moves House Bill 2610 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. And Senator Thatcher will carry. That would be great. We'll close the work session on 2610. That does complete our work that we had for today, and we'll be back here tomorrow at 8:30, and I do believe we have another good list of bills. The Department of Corrections is supposed to be here tomorrow, I believe. All right, thank you, and we're adjourned. Thank you, and we're adjourned, I believe. All right.